There's a video game built entirely out of letters and punctuation marks that lives in the permanent collection of the Museum of Modern Art. No real graphics. For most of its life, no tutorial. You genuinely could not play it without a wiki open in another window. Two brothers made it in a terminal, and it's a big part of the reason Minecraft exists. The game is Dwarf Fortress. The man who made Minecraft started with an early prototype openly modeled on it, and you can trace its DNA through the whole genre of colony simulation games that came after. So here's a janky game made of text that one mathematician wrote, now hanging in an art museum, and sitting at the root of the best-selling video game of all time. That's the setup. What I actually want to talk about is the strange way its two creators think about their own creation. Because they don't really act like they designed it, they act like they discovered it. Let me give you the 20-second version of what this thing is. Dwarf Fortress is a simulation where you guide a handful of dwarves to build a fortress, and the game models an almost insane amount of detail underneath. Two brothers, Tarn and Zach Adams, have been building it since 2006. That's about 20 years on one game. It was free for most of that time, it's brutally hard, and it's famous for generating stories nobody wrote. The non-obvious part is how Tarn and Zach treat the game's bugs. Most developers see a bug as a mistake in something they wrote. Tarn treats a bug like a scientist studying a world he found. When something breaks, his first instinct isn't, "I made an error." It's, "What does this tell me about how this world actually works?" The most famous example is the drunk cats. Players noticed that cats were dropping dead in their taverns, covered in vomit, for no obvious reason. Nobody had coded, "Cats die in bars." What happened was a collision of systems that had nothing to do with each other. Tarn had given creatures the ability to clean themselves, originally just so they could wipe gunk off their eyeballs. A separate update let dwarves carry mugs and spill alcohol on the floor. Cats walked through the spilled booze, got it on their paws and fur, then groomed themselves. And cats clean with their tongues, so they were drinking it. The detail that killed them is a unit's error. And I want to flag that this part comes from a single PC gamer write-up, so treat it as the popular reconstruction. When a cat licked a tiny smear of alcohol off its paw, the code apparently counted it as a full mug. Blood alcohol is calculated against body weight, so a cat taking a human-sized dose hits lethal levels, throws up everywhere, and dies of heart failure. Tarn only figured it out by investigating the piles of dead cats. Three reasonable systems, grooming, spilled liquid, toxicology, collided to produce something nobody intended. Tarn's own favorite bug is even better. In the game's adventure mode, praying to a god would crash the whole thing. The reason is wonderful. Gods in the simulation don't have a body or a mind because they're purely metaphysical. But the engine assumes everything you can interact with is physically real, with a location and a history. Gods aren't. So when you prayed, the game reached for a body that wasn't there and died. As Tarn put it, it turns out the gods are indeed purely metaphysical. The crash wasn't a typo. It was the simulation revealing a fact about its own universe that its authors hadn't consciously decided. Same flavor as the time banished characters started wandering the world completely naked because the game decided an exiled person no longer had any clothing requirements. But more detail is not actually the goal, and this is where the brothers get genuinely interesting. They will delete depth on purpose. The clearest case is the economy. Early versions had a working dwarven economy, with coins, prices, and personal bank accounts. They ripped it out. And the community's account, which the brothers have never really pushed back on, is that they removed it not because it was broken, but because it worked. A functioning economy just made the game more tedious, without adding any story you could feel. That's the rule. Zach says it directly. If you make the simulation really complicated but you don't surface it to the players, it's not going to become part of their story. Every feature has to clear two bars at once. It has to be interesting to simulate, and the player has to be able to notice it. Stories are the actual product here, and the players prove it. They write up their disasters like epic novels. There's a legendary fortress called Boat Murdered, passed from one player to the next, that became this sprawling tragic saga of elephants and lava and collective madness. The game's most quoted motto is "Losing is fun," and there's no win condition at all on purpose, because winning would end the story. That motto is a bit of a cliché in this world by now, but the design behind it is real. Tarn's line is, "If you're bored, you win." Engineering underneath all this is almost perversely old-fashioned. It's more than 700,000 lines of code, written in an old language called C++ that Tarn himself calls a mess that accreted over time. And it runs on a single thread by choice. Tarn avoids multi-threading, the standard modern trick for using all of a processor's cores at once, because he finds it bug-prone and doesn't have much experience with it. One mathematician, one core, the deepest simulation in games. There's one genuinely counterintuitive fact in here worth keeping. Big fortresses famously grind to a halt over time. The community calls it FPS death, where FPS just means frames per second. Everyone assumes the cause is pathfinding, the dwarves working out how to walk places. It mostly isn't. The developers dug into this back in 2021, and the answer surprised people. Pathfinding is well optimized. It accounts for under 10% of the work. So what actually grinds a fortress down? The real cost is every single creature taking its turn. Plus the game constantly checking what every creature can see, including ones buried deep in caverns nobody is even watching. That's one source, so hold it loosely. But it's a nice reminder that the obvious villain usually isn't the real one. Here's the part that stuck with me most. For 16 years, this game was free. The brothers lived on donations, reportedly around $1 million total across that entire stretch, enough to feed two people and not much more. Then in 2022, they finally put it on Steam for money. And the reason was not ambition. Zach needed expensive medication for years, and they had no employer, which meant no health insurance. Tarn said it plainly. Healthcare costs are pretty much the whole reason. Sit with that. The deepest, most ambitious simulation anyone has ever built in a video game went commercial because the American healthcare system left two self-employed brothers exposed. The Steam version sold far past what the publisher expected and made them millionaires. And by every account, the flashiest thing they bought was a Honda Civic. That last detail is the standard wholesome indie developer story, so take it as charming color. The healthcare part is the one that actually says something. One last thing reframes the whole project. That version number isn't marketing. By one count, the brothers keep a literal to-do list of around 2,600 features the game still needs, and the version number is meant to track how much of that list is done. When the game hit 0.42, PC Gamer joked it was 42% of the way to simulating existence. Today, in 2026, it sits at version 53.14 after 20 years of work. And since going commercial, it's been moving at roughly one of those points per year. Run that math and a finished 1.0 lands somewhere around 2070. The most ambitious piece is still ahead. It's a system that generates a unique creation myth for every world, where the magic itself follows logically from which god did what. Zach studied ancient history and writes the myths. Tarn has a math PhD and turns them into rules. Different physics of the supernatural in every single game. So that's Dwarf Fortress, a game that sits in an art museum, seeded a genre, and might not be finished until its creators are in their 90s. What I keep coming back to isn't the depth. It's the posture. Two brothers who treat their own software like a natural world they get to explore, who delete brilliant features that don't earn a place in a story, and who only charged money for any of it because one of them got sick. If you take one thing from this, let it be that the most interesting things people build are often the ones they're a little surprised by themselves.